The Financial Times guides you through complex issues. In divisive times, don't settle for black and white. When you need the full perspective, turn to FT.com. Become a subscriber today. Search for FT subscription.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
Welcome to the podcast, episode 1032. It's the 3rd of April, 2018. On the podcast today, I have Tim Crane, General Manager of Caterpillar Solutions and Director of Sea Machines, that's SEE ticker. And Tim discusses their progress at the company from his angle. Also on the podcast, Neil Carson, CEO, and Graham Heath, CFO of i3 Energy. Ticker there is i3E. And the guys talk about their asset and news flow for the company potentially coming up in this quarter. Plus, also on the podcast, Michael Masterman, chairman of W Resources, that's W-R-E-S, and Michael discusses the commencement of earthworks at his flagship La Perla mine in Spain. Also, Alan Green, CEO of Brand Communications, talks about the following companies: Prairie Mining, that's PDZ, Powerhouse Energy, PHE, and Advanced Oncotherapy. Plus, as always, I have the top five most followed companies on Vox Markets in the last 24 hours, and the top five most liked RNSs too.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Tim Crane, General Manager of Caterpillar Solutions and Board Member of Seeing Machines, that's SEE. Tim, thanks for joining me.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
And if you could, I mean, before we get into your role, for people not familiar with Seeing Machines, give a quick sort of summary as to what the business is about, if you could, Tim.
Sure. Seeing Machines is really a world leader in computer vision related technologies that help machines like Caterpillar trucks understand people by tracking and interpreting human faces and eyes. We Caterpillar licensed their driver safety system as one of their primary products that we implement into our fleet of trucks and both on highway and off highway vehicles.
Excellent stuff. And so, General Manager of Caterpillar Solutions, and you're also on the board of Sea Machines. So how does that work? How does that fit? Give us an overview of that sort of position, if you could, Tim.
You bet. I joined the Sea Machines board in 2017, and that was after completing the license of the driver safety system in 2015. I now run a portfolio of businesses for Cat called Caterpillar Solutions. That includes three things: a fleet management business, which provides customers access to the right equipment through capital efficient solutions that increase availability and lower the total cost of ownership. And then we have a productivity solutions business that helps customers optimize their operations and provide significant productivity improvements. And then the part of the business that got us into the Seeing Machines relationship is a safety services business. It's really about facilitating employee engagement and operational improvements through a relentless pursuit of cultural excellence and the implementation of cutting-edge technologies, which Seeing Machines is a part of.
Yeah, okay. And you recently released, or Seeing Machines released, of course, their interim results this week. Take us through that, if you could, and are you pleased with them, Tim?
I think we should be very pleased. We've come a long way. You know, $14.6 million record revenue for the second half of our 2017 year, total increase of sales of 267%. You know, the automotive segment revenue totaled $6.9 million, representing a seven times increase over the same period last year. And the fleet revenue, $5.9 million, represents a 258% increase over the same period last year. So I'd say those are pretty strong results, and they were in line with expectations. So yeah, I'd say it was a good year and a lot of highlights of what made up that year.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, well, let's move on to sort of Caterpillar business. And if you could, give us a picture as to the global resource and mining sector, the opportunities there, and how it will impact the success or not of Seeing Machines, driver safety, and their system technology there. And is it sort of, you know, widely accepted, and are you seeing sort of increased demand there?
Yeah, so, you know, I think one of the great things about our business is that customers never stop looking for ways to control risk, even in downturns or upturns. And, you know, the mining business is a very cyclical business. So the DSS makes fatigue and distraction risk, which we license from Seeing Machines, visible in real time. And we seem, you know, we were able to provide huge safety improvements to our customers at our sites. And so, you know, if, when Caterpillar released its 27 year-end results with forecasts looking forward, you know, we said, and you've seen that most mining customers have returned to profitability. You know, commodity prices are generally above investment thresholds. Machine utilization is increasing. So our customers and their utilization of the assets that we sell into are increasing. Oftentimes when things are tough for miners, they will park up trucks and just not run as many trucks. And what you're seeing is that parked fleet declining. You've got mining capital expenditures increasing. So all of that positively impacts our safety services business. You know, we have the safety services business licensed the driver safety system from Seeing Machines. So we're seeing shorter sales cycle. We're seeing larger investments. We've seen some of the largest world, you know, the world's largest mining companies roll out our technology globally to every site around the world. And then our sales between 2016 and 2017 doubled. And we expect them really to double again this year. So I think that's all pretty positive news.
Yeah. Okay. Well, let's talk about quite a hot sector generally, but the emergence of autonomous technology in heavy vehicles, and I believe mining has probably been one of the early adopters, really, of this technology. Can you give us a bit of an overview of that, Tim?
Yeah. So I think the mining product for Seeing Machines was probably their first entry into driver monitoring. And like I said, we licensed that in 2015. So Caterpillar, you know, unlike the world where you see the automotive sector, you know, striving towards semi-autonomous vehicles, Caterpillar in the mining sector has really gone from manned machines to fully autonomous unmanned machines. And we have hundreds of autonomous trucks operating 24/7, 365 around the world with nobody in the cab. And we have that today. So unlike the challenges that we face in the automotive sector, you know, miners are in a fully contained environment. Our customers control the roads and they control the vehicles on those roads. And so we've been able to make those trucks fully autonomous. Those autonomous machines are more productive, they're safer, they reduce operational costs to our customers, and it's going to be a big part of our business going forward. And let's be honest, the Seeing Machines driver safety system product wouldn't be a part of a fully autonomous machine. There's not an operator there to see. However, our objective with the driver safety system and that product was never just about mining, although it's a very good application for that technology today. And the number of mining trucks, let's say there are 40 or 50,000 large mining trucks around the world, is relatively a small fleet population. So our objective with the Seeing Machines product goes well beyond mining, and it goes well beyond just safety and fatigue and distraction. It goes into our other makes and models of machines, which we have millions of. And we, you know, believe, and I think you'll see that many of those different makes and models, those models of machines will be manned for the foreseeable future. And so we have this huge opportunity with the driver safety system to really determine and understand operator state. We have the opportunity to understand what the operator is looking at and where they're supposed to be looking. Are they going to see the risk entering the machine operating area? Are they awake? Are they alert? Are they fit for duty? You know, these are all questions that we'll answer through the DSS, and we'll do that across, you know, many, many different makes and models of machines and different applications. And so there's just a huge opportunity long term. And I just also say that the autonomous machine transformation, the movement of, you know, of into the autonomous space is going to take many, many years. And so you're not going to see, you know, in the next 2 years, for instance, the entire mining fleet of large mining trucks going to autonomous. You know, we're only retrofitting certain types of trucks and a few models. And customers are really experimenting with this now. many of which have made some bold claims, and there'll be movement in that direction. But there's still tons of opportunity for the DSS going forward.
Yeah, well, exactly. And so, you know, Seeing Machines technology fits in with these kind of developments, does it?
Absolutely. And it fits in with the developments, not from a standpoint that it fits in the autonomous machines, but it fits in Caterpillar's fleet and portfolio of hundreds of different, you know, models of machines in different applications. And it's going to be a huge part of the way we address some of our primary safety and operator challenges going forward.
Excellent stuff. Well, if someone's listening right now to this and they're not following the story yet on Vox Markets, but you know, you think they should, and they're liking what you're talking about, Tim here, if you could give them three quick reasons why they should hit that follow button on your page on Vox Markets and add you to their watch list, please.
Yeah. So first, we've got a unique selling proposition with a depth of in-house expertise in the computer vision, machine learning, AI market. We're at an inflection point. Two, we're really at an inflection point for the driver monitoring business with regulatory guidance pointing to the inclusion of this technology as a primary system in the automotive segment. And I just spoke to you about what that means for the off-highway segment, if you will. And three, Seeing Machines is a world leader in this technology. We really continue to enhance and develop the solution to meet more transport needs globally with strong industry validation by some of the world's largest companies and premier brands, you know, brands like Emirates, General Motors, and Caterpillar.
Excellent stuff. Tim, good to chat to you, and hopefully we'll chat again in the not-too-distant future. Thanks very much.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Neil Carson, CEO, and Graham Heath, CFO of i3 Energy. That's i3E ticker. Guys, thanks for joining me.
Hello, Justin. Hi, thanks for having us.
Thanks for having us, Justin.
Yeah, it was good to get you back on, because someone did say get these guys back on. It's been a while since you've been in the podcast, and so it's nice to get you back on. And for people listening and not aware of the story, could you summarise what i3 Energy is all about, please?
Yeah, well, since last time we spoke, you know, as you know, we're a UK company. We develop oil fields in the North Sea. It's a very experienced management team, and you know, this is our third time doing this. Our first asset that we have here is called the Liberator oil field. We're just shy of 12 million barrels, and we're really hard under development. We've got lots of key kit in place, and you know, we want to grow as well. So it's a you know, well-honed team in a good part of the, you know, on oil basin in the UK.
Excellent stuff. So looking forward news-wise, I've seen a couple of things that are catching people's eye and excitement here. And so there's a couple of things, but the last bit of news you released was about funding. Can you take us through this, the detail of this and where you are with it?
Yeah, well, it's actually three real catalysts that we're very excited about. One is we've got these reserves. We have our engineering auditor, competent report, has given, you know, very good, healthy reserves, just shy of 12 million barrels for us. Secondly, we have, in terms of growth, we've applied and what I'd call a play-to-win strategy in a property in the North Sea, and that's in a license round. And we have applied for it, and again, of the opinion of our auditors, if we did win this, and this news might be soon, it might be, you know, certainly in Q2, that we might add another 22 million barrels to our current 12. So that's, for us, that's really exciting. The other thing is, in terms of, we've got joint venturing discussions ongoing. So in this way, we have attracted, you know, industrial partners and E&P companies who do like the quality of these barrels. They see the near infrastructure. They like the way that we want to develop these. So we're working on that. So it's really those three things, you know, reserves, targeted growth through 30th license round, and then also, you know, bringing industrial partners into our projects. For us, that's what we do. We're really excited about that.
Yeah. Well, like I said, it's near-term news because we are now in Q2, pretty much. So you're talking there. So on that extra acreage, how confident are you of winning that extra acreage then?
Well, what we do is it's a work program based bid, and you know, all we can do is put forward the best technical case that we can in the engineering. But in the opinion of others, for example, our engineering auditor, you know, they see this as exciting, very good. These would be reserves. These would be an order of 22 million barrels. Plus, you see the kind of development. So what we've done is we've put forward a very strong competitive bid. And it isn't certain that we can get this block. But, you know, we think we've put forward a very, very good case. And what else can we do? But this is, could be imminent news. It's it'd be exciting for us. We'd want to get that news out as soon as we can. And also with the plan that we'd have for the asset.
Okay. And as far as the funding is concerned, so take us through where you are with that so far and, you know, what you've released to date and the details of what we know, please.
Yeah, so we recently we stated to the market that we're in very advanced discussions with joint ventures. Multiple discussions are ongoing. There's industrial parties involved. I mean, lots of due diligence and extremely advanced. And these would be great partners to have in that they see the deep economic value of these projects. That would include our Liberator oil fields and then a targeted block in a 30th license round. They see the maturity of the assets. They see the our plan, the fact that we're 100% and we operate, meaning that it's quite a clear-cut roadmap to getting onto production quite soon. So we've got a, it takes a while to do this. There's quite an investment involved. So, you know, I'd ask the market to be patient as we work through this. But we're confident that that we will enter into a joint venture arrangement shortly.
Yeah, yeah. And if, like I said, if that goes ahead, and then on the Liberator field, how much are you looking to produce on a daily basis there from that field? And when, hopefully?
Yeah, well, when is as soon as possible, and it is subject to us finalising our field development plan. We are well underway in that. By bringing in the joint ventures and industrial parties, that helps to kind of finalise that. So that's something that's really quite doable, and we really want to happen as soon as possible. On the production, a single well on the Liberator field can produce about 10,000 barrels of oil per day. So we like to get as many of those in production as soon as we can, and this is good oil. This is oil that's 30 API oil. For those that understand, it's pretty light oil. It's calibrated to Brent, attracts Brent pricing. So for us to have 20 million barrels getting to that level of production, we bought this asset when it was only $33 a barrel, and now we're sitting at 70. So it's quite a value addition to that part alone. So, you know, we're very driven, great team with a great asset to get production on as soon as we can.
Yeah, well, a part of the team co-founder as well is Graham. And so, Graham, what has attracted you to this? I mean, you both sort of co-founded this I3, and it's probably worth taking us through why it's called I3 as well, I think, isn't it?
Yeah, that's right. So, you know, for Neil and I, this is our third company collectively. We started in the North Sea. Ithaca was Neil's first, and then he and I worked through Iona. So that's I1 and I2, and I3 is our third take on it. So, you know, we came into the market at a difficult time to acquire assets, right, when the market's at the bottom. But that's where, you know, value can really be created as well. You know, as Neil said, the day that we bid for Liberator, Brent had just bounced off of $33 a barrel. So, in our ability to capture it at that point in time, in addition to the, you know, the human resources that are also always available in a market bottom, we've built just a fantastic team, great board through which we'll, you know, develop and deliver this asset. And as we said, you know, hopefully our 30th round application target in the upcoming 12 months. So that's the big attraction, really. We still, you know, really believe in the North Sea. I think there's a huge amount of value that can be created. The, you know, the regulatory environment and the taxation environment is improving in that regard. You know, all parties are getting really creative around how to get these deals done, and that's, you know, really what we're seeing in the joint venture conversations that we've been having.
Yeah, well, you are sort of, like I said, a specialist in North Field now, in North Sea now. So when the downturn happened and you see all these stories of the majors leaving, you know, so what, why were you attracted when they were leaving? I mean, what's the difference between being a major and a company your size? What's the difference there?
I think we see nothing but opportunities. So when the emitters are leaving, they're not quite leaving. What they're doing is they're passing assets down through the kind of food chain. And we see lots of value, and we're really excited about it. And it's great to buy assets when you're at the lower part of the cycle. Yeah. And create the value as we do. So we get to move the needle a lot, whereas the majors, you know, it's a lot harder to move the needle. So that's our model, and we're just so excited about the North Sea.
Yeah, exactly. And so, I mean, to a major, maybe sort of anything up to 10,000 barrels a day is not, you know, significant for them, is it really? But for a small company like yourself, of course, it's a major. It's massive, isn't it, really?
It really is. You know, it's not a small amount of oil, but it's a, you know, it's really, for us, it's quite material. You're right. And also the timing and the fact that we operate 100% means you don't have other delays that you could have. So, yeah. It's quite clear-cut. It's a simple development. You know, back to the joint venturing, what's exciting us is, you know, we have conversations that's over $200 million investment. And that's, you know, that's a great catalyst. That's one to be watching out for anybody who's sharing our story.
Absolutely. Well, let's reiterate those. For someone listening right now who likes the sound of this but are not yet following the story on Vox Markets, give them three quick reasons why they should hit that follow button on your page and add you to their watchlist, please.
Yeah, it's just a material increase in reserves. You know, potentially imminent award of a license round that can, you know, treble our reserve base. So that's a reason. Secondly, the joint venturing to, for us to attract investment that, you know, it's over $200 million, and where we'd be funded right through to first oil. That's a really good second reason. Third is, you know, we do want to grow with that production base and field development plans. It's really a good start, and it's where we can, you know, we want to take the company to make sure we're using the cycle. And, you know, it's good in North Sea that we can add significant barrels.
Excellent stuff, guys. Good to chat to you. And like I say, news is maybe forthcoming in this quarter, and so there's a lot of stuff going on. So hopefully we'll be chatting again in the not too distant future. Thanks very much.
Thank you, Justin. Take care.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Michael Masterman, chairman of W Resources, at WRES ticker. Michael, thanks for joining me.
Justin, great to have you back.
Yeah, thank you very much. Well, it's been like a week away, seems like a month away. It seemed very long, I think, with that extra break with the blank holiday we had. But yes, back here, and it's nice to see that you're out with some news progressing the project there of the La Perla mine, and we'll get into that in a bit. But Michael, for people listening, they've never heard of W Resources. How would you explain it to them?
Okay, so W Resources, W Res, we've got tungsten mines in Spain, Portugal. The flagship is La Perla, which is fully financed and under development. And we've got Regor in northern Portugal that will follow quickly afterwards. We've also got some great assets in central Portugal in the copper and gold space that are also moving quickly.
Marvellous. So while I was away, you released some news on that, and that was the grants. You were given some grants, weren't you?
Yes, last week we got formal confirmation from the Junta de Extremadura that they're providing us with 5.3 million euros of grants for the development of La Perla. That's fantastic. The capital cost of La Perla is about 24 million euros in total, so 5.3 million is a very nice contribution in the form of a non-refundable grant. And that's a very nice top-up to the $35 million that BlackRock, the large global fund manager, has also provided by way of term loan.
Yeah.
Those funds have allowed us to, if you like, get the bulldozers rolling, which is the subject of today's announcement. We just really wanted to give the market a quick punchy update in terms of what was happening on site in La Perla. Earthworks has started. We've got all the key pads or platforms ready for the construction workforce, the construction officers. We've started the work to clear and ready the site for the concrete and steel guys, and on an engineering front, we're moving along very quickly with all the key plant components. I think we're at 75% on the crusher, which probably would be the first part of the plant we install. And we've also, at a very high level of contracts locked down and committed with our various suppliers. So again, that's one of the key statistics that should give shareholders a lot of comfort that we've got rolling very quickly after that BlackRock financing in February.
Yeah, absolutely. So you've gone from almost corporate levels of, agreeing that funding, and now you're in the field, like you say, action's been put in place. You've got the guys building and starting to cut the ground and make themselves known there. So how long will this take? And just people listening, when do you hope to go into production?
Okay, so it's we've always said to the market 12 months from completion of financing, which was on 15 February 2017. So, first quarter of 2019, we'll be ramping up and commissioning the facility. All the key plant components, the crusher, the jig, and the concentrator are all being busily engineered at various factories around Europe. The crusher itself is coming from Metso. Metso is the leading supplier of crusher equipment globally. They've got a fantastic factory just across the border in France, so that'll just come across the border and be delivered just in time to slot into the steel and concrete structures that will be up when that equipment arrives. And we've got the Germans building the jig, a state-of-the-art jig and concentrator, and that's also rolling along at a pretty good pace. So look, the key to successful project execution is make sure you've got all the preparation in place and be in a good position to move quickly and decisively to execute the project. So we're very pleased where we've got to at this early stage. We're going to keep all the shareholders updated with pictures and updates and all the other things that we can send through, and we're looking forward to seeing La Prilla rise out of the ground, we'll keep all the investors and shareholders updated with pictures along the way.
Yeah, well, if you post those pictures on Vox, on your page on Vox, every person that follows will get that notification to the front screen of their smartphone, so that's nice there. And so when you're up and running after this construction period and you're producing, what is how much are you going to produce there, Michael?
Okay, so phase one is 2,700 tonnes per annum of tungsten concentrate. That the earnings from that first phase of production will generate around about $20 million per annum in EBITDA earnings. It's effectively cash flow, earnings before interest, tax and depreciation. We'll then follow relatively quickly, particularly given the very strong tungsten price environment, to expand to our T3.5 operation, and that'll take us up to around about $40 million US dollars per annum of earnings. So looking out to 2019, 2020, shareholders should look at all the construction and development progress we make this year, but they ought to look also very closely at the kind of earnings numbers we'll be able to generate.
Absolutely. And as far as the jurisdiction, it's got to help being in a sort of first world country like Spain, isn't it?
Yeah, we're able to access world-class European equipment suppliers, and very much Metso and all Mineral are very much in that category. They're able to deliver the equipment just in time across the border into Spain, and we're able to, our customers really like the fact that we're in a first world country and have, in the case of the European customers, directly delivery to their facilities.
Absolutely.
Yeah, direct by truck.
Yeah. Okay, well, Michael, if someone is listening and like the sound of this but are not following the story, give them three quick reasons why they should hit that follow button on your page, please.
Okay, number one, La Perla is financed and is moving quickly towards first production in 2019. There'll be a lot of news flows supporting all of that progress. Secondly, we have a portfolio of very good tungsten projects in Spain and Portugal that will follow. Regular in northern Portugal will be next off the ranks. And thirdly, we've got a great portfolio of copper and gold assets, which will just add further asset and earnings to the whole portfolio.
Marvellous stuff. Michael, good to chat to you. And like I said, things are going along nicely there, so I look forward to chatting to you again in the not-too-distant future. Thanks very much.
Thanks, Justin. Bye.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Alan Green, CEO of Brand Communications. You're all right, Al?
Good morning, Jess. Yes, I'm very good. Thanks. Welcome back from Holes.
Yeah, it's not. I do feel like I've been away for a long time for some reason. You know, I think it's a bank holiday Monday as well. But also, I feel like it's almost, you know, the time in between Christmas when the markets open back up for a couple of days and it's not real market.
Yeah.
It feels like that at the moment. It feels like the market's not really open, you know?
Yeah, it does, doesn't it? It's this strange sort of almost lethargy, I think. I mean, we're seeing market movements, but you know, many pundits in the market are saying that this is the most hated bull market of all time, all the rest of it. But is it Trump? Is it world affairs? It could be a number of things. Maybe Putin's turns his attention now to the stock market, and he's kind of you know, manipulating that behind the scenes. Who knows?
Yeah, I've got to laugh. It's funny that Trump. You mentioned world affairs there, but the two things he's not mentioning is his affair with that apparently that porn star and the stock market, two things he will not mention, you know, that and he's never, you know, backwards to come as forwards when he needs to talk about something that's that boosts his own ego. He will boost it, but you know, that's two things he'll not mention. Yeah, so we got the tariffs. I know China, I read today, China's 128 products they've put tariffs on now, American products, including pork and wine, which they import quite a bit of. So it's a bit of a slippery slope, that. And and I heard that quantitative easing is, you know, is easing now, they're tightening rather than, or they're starting to, or will be. And I think that will be a major sort of upset for the market, I think, really.
Well, I think it will, but as I said before we came on air, just is it not the, are we not seeing a market at the moment that's moving? It's basically on steroids. It's so full of QE that actually probably we need to see a return to a market that isn't pumped full of asset purchases from the state. You know, it's that's not a healthy situation, and I think if we return back to normal market forces, I think we'd see a lot more volatility, but there's certainly be a lot more excitement. I mean, we wouldn't have enough to talk about, you know, or we'd have too much to talk about. So anyway, there we go.
Well, let's zero in some stocks here. Let's go from the macro to the micro. What are you looking at, Al?
Three stocks today, just what were two in particular. Firstly, I want to look at Prairie Mining, PDZ.
Yeah, I saw they're down 26% at the moment. What's going on there?
Well, there's Prairie made an announcement this morning, which it's information that's already in the public domain. But in effect, what has happened is that the rights over the Jan Karski mine, Prairie had up until the 2nd of April this year to lodge a mining concession application for Jan Karski. Under Polish law, which Prairie is adhered to, it includes or submit a deposit development plan and other elements to the application, and it also needs to receive environmental consent. Now it's still waiting for this environmental consent, which hasn't happened. And as we've said when I've spoken about Prairie in the past, the scale of these projects, I mean, Jan Karski, if we go back to the Align Research article, which was actually very, very thoroughly written, there's the sheer size of these projects is 3.5 to 4 billion. With Jan Karski, you've got a 24 year mine life. So it's a huge project. And of course, at the stage that Prairie picked up these projects, there wasn't the urgency to produce Polish coal that there is now. Now, Prairie is listed on both the Warsaw Stock Exchange and London Stock Exchange, and of course ASX in Australia, and and it has invested an awful lot of money into bringing the projects this far. This process is simply part of the protracted process to complete the application for consent on the mines, and PRERA has been advised by its lawyers that initiating legal proceedings is a requirement under Polish law. What's the deadline ministry concession was up. Prairie, quite simply, isn't looking for a fight. It's just simply following this due process and procedures. And this issue has been flagged up on a number of previous RNS statements that have been published by the company. And it's simply part of a long drawn out and protracted process to get the mining concession in place and start work. If we look at where Prairie is, its half-year accounts showed $15 million on the balance sheet, so it's in a very healthy financial position. $50 million. CD Capital, in conjunction with China Coal, has a right to invest a further $70 million into the strategic agreement. And let's not forget that it's just brought on board two major institutional investors, and that's Lansdowne Partners and, of course, J.P. Morgan. So these companies will have done their research and looked at every aspect of each agreement prior to making those or taking those steps. So they've gone in knowing full well that there will be ups and downs on the way until we arrive at the completed agreement. Everything's in place for the company to proceed. It's got a great management. Obviously, Ian Middlemass, who's the chairman, chairman of Barclay Energy, Salt Lake Potash, Piedmont Lithium, and many other companies. And Ben Stojkovic, of course, is former BHP Billiton. So there's also a very strong tie between Australia and Poland, and Prairie is essentially, as you know, an Australian company. So with all these ties in place, Prairie does not expect that the concession won't be granted. It's simply following due process because there's been an oversight probably at the Ministry of Environment allowing this deadline to pass. So quite simply, my view is that with Lansdowne Partners and JP Morgan now invested, I would view any fall in the share price while this process is taking place as a great opportunity to top up.
Yeah, okay. I think you just said then, as we know, Poland is owned by Australia. Rather than Prairie. Yeah, Poland's owned by Australia. I think you substitute the word Poland for Prairie there, or Prairie for Poland. I understand what you mean.
Prairie is an Australian Australian mining company, essentially, and Australia and Poland have a very close working relationship, where they've signed a promotion and agreement to protect investments between the two. I mean, Poland's a member of the EU. Clearly, it's a very benign investor-friendly environment for companies and institutions to invest into, and to speculate into as well. So I think a lot of people are concerned. I've had a few messages on Twitter this morning, I certainly have no concerns at all. I'm invested into Prairie, and I will be taking advantage if the share price falls any further. I will be taking advantage of that dip and topping up. But this is quite simply part of the process, the protracted process in getting these mining applications through and completed.
So it's odd, isn't it? So essentially, in short, this application, the environment application, they should have applied within 3 months. They haven't. So because they haven't, they have to take a legal action. Is that right?
No. They have applied. The Ministry of Environment simply hasn't come back.
No, that's what I said. They've applied for it, but the Ministry of Environment hasn't come back. And if they haven't come back within 3 months, under Polish law, you should take legal action against that.
So they are simply following the due procedure that's laid down in Polish law, and that's it. So simply protecting their rights and just making sure that all the I's all the T's crossed and the I's are dotted. So,
okay, all right. What's next you're looking at, Al?
Okay, we talked about this before as well. This is a Powerhouse Energy Group. And of course, Keith Alorn, you've spoken to many times on the podcast. And it's just really, I think, to focus on what has, to me, been a largely unexplained fall in the share price to where we are now. I mean, the company's just worth $6.7 million, and yet you've got this revolutionary technology, waste-to-energy technology, where they can throw in old tyres and waste. If you think of Back to the Future, you remember the scene in Back to the Future when they chucked all the rubbish in the back of the car and then powered up and shot off. Yeah, this is basically what Powerhouse Energy does.
So they've got the flux capacitor there.
Flux capacitor, that's it. Yes, exactly that. So it produces clean green hydrogen, and obviously from that, once all this rubbish has gone to the furnace, it produces this synthesis gas, or syngas as they call it, which can either generate electricity, clean electricity, or produce clean green hydrogen to power fuel cells. And of course, one of the most recent announcements was the announcement with Wrightbus, which was a massive step forward for them, and really, I think, has got a lot of people looking at the potential of hydrogen fuel cells rather than batteries or other forms of power in the future. Just looking at the fuel cell vehicle opportunity, you've got cities all over Europe. The EU has provided a £200,000 rebate on each fuel cell powered bus across Europe. We've got Transport for London ordering fuel cell vehicles, and many other transport groups across the world. So hydrogen fuel cells are seen as the way forward. And of course, the Wrightbus deal that Powerhouse has struck really symbolizes that, and I think is the first in a series of steps for this company to take forward, given that it's got a totally clean, green way of producing this hydrogen. Now, again, I go back to Align Research, but I think they probably produce and write the best output that's out there at the moment. When Powerhouse Energy were covered by Align Research in July last year, they had a conviction buy rating and a target of 4.22p. Now, of course, this is at the point where they'd just raised a little over $1 million at a penny last year. The company has progressed since then. It's done everything it said it would do. It's ticked all the boxes. And yet here we are with the share price languishing at 0.4p. Now, that's the Align Research have a target, which is basically 10 times that. By any standard, at any level, this company has got to be a storming buy. I think it's a great opportunity to get in now before the potential of the hydrogen production is realised.
You say that in respect of people doing their own research, yes, Al? I mean, you know.
Oh, of course, yeah, that's right. I am a shareholder here too. So you know, I'm a shareholder in this company. I had shares, I sold shares, I now hold the shares again. So yes, I am talking up my own book, if you like. But by the same token, this is the company. There are other waste energy systems out there, but Powerhouse have perfected this system, and it's further down the road than anything else, to the point where it's entering the commercial world now by signing these deals. And I think where we sit now, in a few months' time, people are going to wonder why they didn't get on board at this level. But yes, do your own research. Don't take my word for it. Take a close look at the company. There's a great video on the website that explains the process. But just look at the news flow over the past few months too. That's the important thing.
Marvellous. Anything else, Al?
Yes, this morning we've just had an announcement from Advanced Oncotherapy, and of course this is the Advanced Oncotherapy Epicode AVO. Share price is currently at about at just on 43 pence. The company's traded as high as it's just under 70 pence on the year, and as low as 22-23 pence. Now, advanced oncotherapy. I'll just basically cover very quickly what the company does. It is developing a light machine, which is a smaller, more portable machine that generates proton beam therapy and provides proton beam therapy service for cancer and tumor sufferers. And it's compared to radiotherapy, it's a far cleaner, it's a far more accurate way of using this form of treatment. The company signed a massive deal last year with Yantai Sipu, who are a Chinese company, as their new distributor and investor into the company, generating a total investment of some 37 million, which is going to be used to complete the development and of the light machine. And it's fully expected that the light machine will start treating tumors in autumn of this year. In addition to which, of course, we've got the Harley Street premises as well, which will be the new treatment centre in the UK, and that is due to be completed in March 2019. Announcement this morning, just to say that Yantai Sipu are continuing discussions with a major China medical and pharmaceutical distribution company, and this company is going to take advanced oncotherapy's light machine forward in China in regard to distribution and backup and everything else, basically it's progress as per usual. So I just think it's important to bring this back. We've not talked about this for a few months, but with an announcement today out about 20 minutes ago from the company, I thought it was a good time to bring to the attention of listeners again.
Yeah, but on the chart, I think it could go down. Could we test that, like the 200-day moving average, which is coming upwards to meet it? So I'd say around 35, 36 pence maybe, but yeah, so because it's been a nice rally from that low, didn't it? When it's down 10 pence at one point, wasn't it? I think, yeah.
It was. It was indeed. Yeah. I think, like a lot of investors, that you know, when you see it drop to that level, I certainly bought in that level, and we've enjoyed a big push higher. But again, you know, every light machine is going to sell for about $38-40 million. So if you do the math on that, you can get some idea of the potential scale of this company and the potential revenues it could generate in the future. Plus, of course, you know, we're investing into a wonderful treatment that will save lives, and that's probably the most important thing underneath it.
Marvelous, a gamut of investments there to look at. You've got coal, pretty much. You've got new tech. Turning clean sort of energy, you know, from old into new,
and clean, course, green hydrogen.
And also you've got new tech there, helping to solve the battle, or win the battle against cancer. So lovely. Al, thanks for that, fella, and we'll speak next week.
Thanks, just speak next week.
Okay, it's time for the top five most followed companies on Vox Markets in the last 24 hours. They are as follows: at five, Blenheim Natural Resources, that's BNR. At four, Crawshaw Group, that's Craw. At three, Ferrum Crescent, FCR. At two, it's K4X Discovery Holdings. Got a big contract going on there, but even in this market, it's down. That's C4XD, a lot of buzz there about that on Twitter. And number one most followed company, actually, I wrote a blog about this company last night. I send it out by email news group. By all means, you know, subscribe and you get my blogs to your inbox. But it's Armadale Capital, ACP, who updated or released a scoping study last week, which is the same as a pre-economic assessment. And it's quite bullish, actually. Very good figures came out from that, including 122% IRR, internal rate of return, and an NPV, I think, of post or pre-tax of $349 million, the MPV, and that's their market cap is still sub 5 million. So you can see if they get to, you know, bring that into production, a low capital cost as well, then there's a lot of upside there, a lot of value in that mine. Okay, that's it for those top five most followed companies. Now, top five most liked RNSs are as follows: at five, Blenheim Natural Resources, that's Marley Lithium Drilling to commence. At 4, Metal Tiger, MTR, Botswana Copper Silver, Project EMP approval. At 3, United Oil and Gas, update on Corallian Farmer Agreement. At 2, Motif Bio, initiation of NDA rolling submission for Iclaprim. And number 1, most liked RNS, came from Asia Met Resources. That's reports, assay results for BKM Geotech Holes. That's it for the podcast. Thanks for listening. Muchos apreciados.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
Hear the intriguing stories behind some of the world's best love songs in the FT's Life of a Song podcast. From soul to funk, to punk to jazz, discover how classic songs like Smells Like Teen Spirit, Yesterday, and Stairway to Heaven were born. Search online or listen at ft.com/podcasts. Plus, don't miss the new Life of a Song book, featuring a compilation of 50 songs that have appeared in FT weekend columns. Pick up your copy from Amazon, your local bookshop, or give a gift to someone who'd enjoy this brilliant literary mixtape.